So what Emily talked about is kind of a nice segue into what we're going to be talking about, but shifting from Denver and keeping going west, Deschutes County, for those of you who don't know, and probably many of you don't, is in Oregon, and we're kind of in the smack dab middle of the state, and the most populated area is Bend, Oregon, which has about 90,000 people, big mountain community. So just to kind of give you a perspective, we're not a huge city in a huge county, but pretty big, about 150,000 overall in our county. So what we wanted to look at is back in 2008, in Oregon, TDAP became a requirement for all incoming seventh graders. Well, I don't know if you probably, everyone has kind of different requirements regarding school law. And in Oregon, we don't exclude kids until February. Don't ask me why, but that's how it's always been. And so we kind of give parents until February to get their kids up to date with school requirements. So we had a little bit of lag time between September and February to get these kids up to date. But the school nurses came to me and were very concerned because they realized that a lot of their kids did and parents did not know about this new requirement. And at the same time, the Oregon Immunization Program decided to provide Tdap vaccine at no cost as a special project for school-located vaccination clinics in 2008. And the reason to do this is because they also realized that clinics could be overwhelmed by this new requirement in a short amount of time for Tdap. So adolescents 10 through 14 from public school systems were given opportunity to receive Tdap between around September and December of 2008. And so we did about 10 middle schools in that period of time, and we provided free vaccine. We went into the schools during school hours. We worked really closely with the school nurses to do this. And then what was interesting, midway through this project in October, I also have a very strong local immunization coalition made up of all the major pediatric providers and some family practice providers in our community. And we started talking about this project, and some concerns came out that we discussed further within this coalition meeting. The coalition meeting kind of derailed into this, which was fine. And some of the concerns they came with were they felt that they were losing that, I guess you could call, carrot to getting kids into their clinic, into their medical home, by providing Tdap in the schools. They were concerned that those kids would not go on to get not only meningococcal and HPV vaccine, but a full well adolescent visit, which a lot of our clinicians really expressed was very important for especially mental health issues and talking with adolescents and screening them. A lot of them had not been to a well child visit since about kindergarten. So that was one of their concerns. And their other concern was the fact, just the basic concern, that by providing only Tdap, we were missing the opportunity to provide meningococcal and HPV vaccine to this population. And they were curious if they ever go on to actually get those two other vaccines. So I thought about that, and I thought those were concerns well worth looking into further, so I called Holly, who is working in Oregon State, to see if she'd be interested in researching this with me a little bit further. So I'm going to go ahead and pass it on to Holly to tell you the findings.
Okay. Thanks, Heather. So as she said, she came to us, and it was nice to actually work on a project that had some real implications and the possibility of really addressing a concern that had been expressed by the providers in that community. So we had two objectives: that we wanted to examine uptake of all adolescent recommended vaccines, so obviously Tdap, but meningococcal and HPV among those kids who participated in that Tdap-only clinic. And then we wanted to do a comparison. So we decided we would compare vaccine coverage rates to the adolescent rates at three of the largest clinics in Deschutes County. And I just want to say that at the outset that these objectives were, we never expected to come out of this with conclusive results, whether or not that school-based clinic was deterring kids from going to their medical home. I don't think we have the ability to do that, but we knew that we could get a good understanding of the situation and use our alert IIS data to probably take a look and see what was going on and see if we could find any relationships out there. So that was really what we expected to get out of the project. And so our methods were to use Oregon IIS data. Our IIS system is called Alert. And we identified the children who received Tdap in that school-based clinic. And they were coded as S. There was a requirement when you received the vaccine that you needed to use every dose administered for this project had to be coded with an S for eligibility coding in the system. So we isolated those, and it was pretty easy to do, and for anything administered between August and December, and for the date of birth range between 1993 and 1998. So we were able to define that cohort pretty well. And then we assessed vaccination rates for the other recommended vaccines for meningococcal and HPV for females only for the date range of 2003 through 2010. And what we wanted is for that entire cohort to have aged into the age of between 12 and 17 years of age by the time we did our date of assessment, so that they were all really had aged into that recommendation for that well-child visit, 11 to 12 years. And then for our comparison group, again, we pulled from IIS, and we looked at the three clinics in serving the majority of children in Deschutes County and for that same date of birth range. And the tricky part of this was defining client association, and I actually went to a colleague at CDC to ask for her help with what the best way to do this. And the issue is that we know that adolescents receive vaccines more than one site typically, and we didn't, that issue of mobility was really important here. So in order to really come up with mutually exclusive groups of kids, so kids that participated in the Tdap clinic, we wanted to make sure they were a unique group, unique from each of the other three sites that we use as a comparison group. So what we did is we defined an association, so every client was only associated with one of the clinics in the group, so that we didn't have overlap between the three comparison groups. And then we assess vaccinations received at other clinics as well. So, for example, if you were associated with one clinic, we included in our assessment any vaccine that you received anywhere, but you only had an association with one defined clinic. So the results were that for that intervention group, so we had that intervention and it reached 1,139, so 1,000, just over 1,000 kids. And that was 21% of the estimated students in those 10 schools where the vaccine was offered. So that was really good uptake. They felt that that had been a really successful program or intervention. And the age breakdown was that two-thirds of those were between 10 and 12 years of age. And interestingly, one-third of them were 13 to 14 years of age. So they were beyond that age where they should have received this vaccine along with other ones. And we thought that was an interesting piece to look at. So then we took a look at that same group and wanted to see how many of them had received meningococcal at any point before or going on up through 2010. Again, our date of assessment is 2010. These kids were all 12 through 19 years of age by the time we did our date of assessment. So 16% received meningococcal at any point in time up to 2010. That's not very many people. And then 26% of females received at least one dose of HPV, and 11% received all three doses of HPV. So, you know, and as a summary, another way of looking at that data, we had, of those who participated in our Tdap-only clinic, we had 71% of females who received neither an HPV or an MCV, or a meningococcal vaccine of any kind. And of the entire population, so males and females inclusive, 84% did not receive a meningococcal vaccine. And that was concerning. Obviously, that's an issue to look at. Now, of those who did receive it, those who received the meningococcal, two-thirds of them received it after that Tdap clinic. And of those who received an HPV, 65% received it after that Tdap clinic in the school setting. So the importance of that to us was that, okay, of those who did receive it, the school itself was not a barrier or in any way making them think they didn't need to go on to get other vaccines. Having said that, that's still a very small proportion of our group that received those other recommended vaccines. So here we charted out our comparison group. So the far left here represents those who participated in the intervention. So they got Tdap in the school, and as I just pointed out, we had the meningococcal and HPV rates were fairly low. The next clinic over, which says Bend LHG, that's a local health department, and that is not a medical home, but they are one of the largest providers of adolescent vaccines in the county. So they see a lot of kids, and the way it typically plays out is that kids show up there just before school exclusion time in February and receive their Tdap vaccine because it's a school requirement, and they are offered consistently the other two vaccines, but we know from Heather that they often decline that vaccine, so those other two vaccines. So we see low rates there, and I think that knowing that the pattern, that is not terribly surprising. Then you move over to the next one to the right, and you've got what's called COPA. It's the largest private pediatric practice in the county, and they have 8 clinical providers on staff, and we see much higher rates. So they're increasing pretty substantially. And by the time you get to the far right, which is Mosaic, which is an FQHC, you see even higher rates. Now, this is where that issue of defining client association becomes really important, and I want to point that out because we had really high rates at that last clinic called Mosaic. But the sample, 400 and some kids, is not really representative of what we think the population there is. And we know that they didn't report well to the registry for a very long time up until recently. So what we have now is a kind of not a very accurate denominator is what we're talking about. So their rates look really high, but we don't think that necessarily is truly an accurate representation. But a good example of what the limitations when you use IIS data are when you're trying to do analysis like this. So then I just threw in the NIS Oregon rates as just for context. To show as a comparison, and you can see that sort of COPA, that middle one, falls into pretty nicely with the standard, the assessment, that the rates for Oregon. So then we did a quick, because we had this issue of association, we wanted to see, okay, the way we defined association for kids, were there issues that played into this that we need to think about? So we wanted to look at the number of recorded vaccinations per client record between the three different comparison groups that we included. So we have Bend on the far left, COPA in the middle, Mosaic on your far right. And we wanted to see the average number of immunizations for each client, and they're pretty similar across the three, so I felt like that was a nice thing to see. The middle row, we looked at the number of organizational sites submitting records per client records. So in addition to the one that they are associated with, how many other clinics have reported administering vaccines to those kids? And again, it's pretty similar across the three. But then the last one that we included at somebody's suggestion from CDC was the lag time per client record. And I think this is obviously tells a pretty important picture here, which is the average lag time. And what we did is we took date of assessment, the difference, the time difference between the most recent vaccination and date of assessment. So how long ago did they receive their most recent immunization at that clinic? How active or how current of a patient are they at that clinic? And we saw an average lag time of 5 years for the Bend clinic, about 5 years for COPA, and then that clinic that had the highest rates, Mosaic on the far right, had a really short lag time. And once again, I talked about that issue of reporting. Well, they had a lot of kids who had been recently seen there and also coincidentally or not coincidentally had very high rates at that clinic. So I thought that was a really important consideration to think about. So our results for that comparison group is that coverage differed a lot between the clinics. The large private and the large FQHC had higher coverage for all their vaccines compared to the local health department comparison site. And that active association, how you define how the client is associated with the clinic, is a really important piece of how you do an assessment, and I think it's got to be carefully considered. So our findings were that offering TDAP in school settings really effectively reached 21% of students, and that was for us a success. About 8% of those did go on to receive another TDAP vaccine, but it could have been a lot more, and I think that the use of alert in the school setting to make sure and screen that kids hadn't received already the TDAP vaccine was an important part of making sure you didn't over-immunize the children that were coming in. And the alert reporting, so the coding of that special dose of vaccine with the S in the eligibility coding for each of those doses, the capture was really good, and that was nice to see. However, uptake for other recommended vaccines was low among our intervention group, and it was low at that local health department comparison group. And that combined with the fact that a third of the TDAP recipients were 13 to 14 years of age, so they'd already missed that 11 to 12-year-old visit. It suggests that this group, the group that's being reached, there's reason to be concerned that they are missing out on vaccines that are not required. So that TDAP vaccine they got, but those other vaccines, we're not seeing the uptake there. So the considerations is that obviously the ideal comparison would be any student who did not take part in TDAP-only clinics to have a larger comparison group, not just these three clinics that we looked at. We have impact of variable alert reporting, which really makes it difficult to determine accurate denominators for our populations, and how to determine active associations for adolescent populations are really challenging. So I wanted to hand it over to Heather for conclusions because she implements.
Then we'll stop going back and forth, I promise, the last slide. So, you know, I took these conclusions, and obviously what Holly said before is we felt like it was effective delivering TDAP in the school setting, but that we clearly, after looking at the data, realized that if we're going to offer that, we need to offer all three in the schools. And we just don't have the resources to do that. It's very resource intensive, and unless we get additional funding or anything, we've chosen not to go back into schools to do that. Instead, we've chosen to really look at providing education awareness to parents about the importance of the adolescent visit and really ensuring access within our county to clinics. Because we felt, we still feel that's a good place for children to go in and get their vaccines as well as, assessments and mental health screening and other things that go along with an adolescent visit. And that the TDAP, since it's a requirement now, we know those rates are going to continue to go up in our state and our county, but really we need to be refocusing on not letting missed opportunities happen for meningococcal and HPV vaccine. So that's it. Oh. And here's acknowledgments. These are some Sarah Boudreau and Heather Crawford and Shannon Stokely all helped put all of this data together for us.